light. There's the blue light.
Hey, I call to order the House Committee on Business and Labor for March 20th, 2015. A little change on the agenda. We're going to carry over House Bill 2939, which is substitute teachers. We're still waiting for paperwork from LFO on that.
House Committee on Education.
Pardon?
Okay.
Did I say education? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm now going to open up the Committee on House Education. I'm just used to business and labor. So. You guys thought you were in the wrong place, didn't you? Okay, so anyway, we're going to be carrying that over. Today we're going to have a public hearing on 2835, and I'll be gaveling it in a minute. And since we have so many people, we're going to have some rules, since this is education, and as soon as I gavel you in, I'll talk about what the rules are. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2835 on Common Core. And Richard, if you want to read what the bill is like.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2835 prohibits the Department of Education from requiring school districts to align instruction or assessments with Common Core state standards and prohibits them from being penalized for failure to align instruction or assessments with Common Core state standards.
Okay. What we're going to do, we're going to have to Rob Saxton, who is from the Department of Education, the Deputy Superintendent, talk, give a little in-service on what Common Core is, and then we'll open it up for the testimony. So, Mr. Saxton.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction, Rob Saxton. Yes, I wanted to talk a little bit today about the Common Core state standards, what they are, how we ended up with them where they are, and then just very, very briefly, a little bit about the assessment that Oregon has chosen to go along with those. First of all, I think it's really important for people to know that Oregon has had standards for quite some time. In fact, standards were first adopted in the state of Oregon in 1995. And technically, that's correct. There actually were things before that that we called the Common Curriculum Goals, which were standards, actually. And we just sort of changed the name somewhere along the way and decided to call them standards instead of curriculum goals. And the state has standards in music, PE, English language arts, science, math, social studies, health, and a couple other subjects also. Standards really are the what of what it is that we want to have students learn. And that's a really important concept as we talk about the Common Core or any set of standards, is that it really is what it is that we want students to know and to be able to do along the pathway of their learning, with the idea that we need to start with the end in mind. And so we should start with what is it that we would want students to master over the course of their learning career in the state of Oregon, K through 12. So what is it that we want when a student graduates from high school? What skills do we want them to have, and what knowledge do they want them to have mastered? And so in order to do that, if we start with the end in mind, we should be able to identify, here's the set for 12th graders. What would be the next logical regression of that set of standards in the 11th grade? So what should they know and master in the 11th grade? And you can just carry that all the way down the stair step of the grades to 10th grade, 9th grade, 3rd grade, kindergarten, all the way down. And so then you have this stair step of progression up, starting with here's what we should have mastered in kindergarten, and again, the what. The difference between what and curriculum, which is sometimes these two things get confused, and they really are exceedingly different, is that curriculum really is how one goes about teaching the set of standards. And we have not chosen a state curriculum. Curriculum is adopted locally by local school districts, and I would even submit that even more specifically is chosen by individual teachers within the classroom. And so there can be a curriculum and a set of standards that we, a curriculum chosen by a local school board. There can be a set of standards that's selected by the state. And when a teacher begins teaching, exactly how they go about using that set of curricula and teaching to that set of standards is up to them. And we would hope that there would be lots of joyous learning that would be involved in the use of the curriculum and eventually the mastery of our standards. There are lots of different times when I talk to people about this that I get opinion from folks about what it is that students ought to master. So what is it that we want students to have mastered by the time they're graduating from high school? And you hear the use of the terminology quite a bit, college and career ready. And that really has become the way that we talk about what it is that we want them to be when they graduate from high school. We want them to be ready for college, or we want them to be ready to move into a career and to be successful. And honestly, in the state of Oregon, when I talk to colleges and college professors and college presidents regularly, they tell me, Rob, you're not sending us kids that are ready. You're not sending them college ready. And sometimes when I talk to business people, they tell me the exact same thing. You know, we need students who are going to, children or people who are going to come, and they're going to show up on time. They're going to need to know how to work with one another effectively and get along. They're going to need to be able to look at problems and problem solve collectively with their partners and with people here within the place where we have put them to work. And so I always want to ask them, well, if we were going to then have a set of standards developed, what would you have them be? What is it that you would like them to master, standard by standard, by the time that they're a senior in high school? And if that's the case, then what would the progression look like? And how would we put that set of standards together? And truthfully, depending on who you're speaking to, you get a little bit different answer. If you talk to the college folks, there's one answer. If you talk to people who are looking at individuals who are going to go right to work, you get another answer. And sometimes if we talk to K-12 educators, you get a third answer altogether. Or to parents, you get another answer. But I really think that that's an important concept, is that we need to bring people together and say, what should we have mastered? And then the next question for me is, and how high should this set of standards be? If we're going to compare the standards that Oregon adopts, how do we want that set of standards to compare to the standard that any other state would adopt? Would we like to have a target that's higher than other states with a higher set of expectations, so that if we are able to achieve them, that our students would graduate better prepared for college and career, and they'd be very competitive across this nation? Or would we want to adopt a set of standards that's lower a little bit than some other states? Perhaps more students are likely to master them, but maybe not as competitive as they ought to be when they come out. Then comes the question, well, what about the global marketplace and international markets? Do we want to set our standards so that they're competitive on the global market? Or would we like them to be a little bit higher than that, or a little bit lower than that, or right on target with the rest of those? And I think those are all great questions. Right now, when I continue to talk to people who are at the college level, they'll tell me that 65% of our students who matriculate from high school into a community college within 2 years of high school graduation in the state of Oregon take developmental education courses. Courses that don't count for credit toward their college degree, but cost the same amount as any other college course to take. And our students are burning through their Pell Grants, they're burning through their parents' dollars and the dollars that they saved up in order to go to college, and other kinds of state aid that we provide for those students. 65% end up in developmental ed. And if you end up in developmental ed, and this is a study done by Northwest Regional Education Labs, there is a 27% chance that you will ever graduate from college and earn any kind of certificate or degree within the next 7 years, any place across the nation. And we're able to track that data. So college folks tell me we're not doing very well. And business folks tell me that we're not doing very well either. And that really became an issue for us. And you can see that in 2007, there began to be a pretty good discussion about what standards look like. And in fact, for the last 5 years, Oregon educators, teachers, teachers' unions, policymakers have worked together to implement a more rigorous math and English standards in every K-12 classroom. And so we haven't adopted these new standards in every subject that I talked about when I had the first slide up, but just in math and English language arts. Sometimes some standards are harder to adopt. If you can imagine trying to adopt a set of science standards, which sometimes can be more controversial, or a set of health standards, which oftentimes are very controversial, especially if you involve human sexuality within that adoption, you're going to get lots of conversation about that. But a set of common standards in English and in math seems like some stuff that we ought to be able to get to. So in 2007, we began to get lots of feedback that our students weren't graduating as prepared as we need them to be here in Oregon and across the nation. And actually, as many of you know, those kinds of warnings and concerns have been well before 2007. But it reared its head again, let's say, one more time in 2007. And at that point in time, the Council of Chief State School Officers, who are the 50 people like me across the nation, were together at a meeting, and some of those chief state school officers were involved in their states adopting English language arts. And they knew what a challenge it was to develop those standards, have them be really high quality, have them measure up with other state standards and globally. And they began to discuss the opportunity to adopt some common standards. And eventually, they did. And that was the predecessor or the beginning of the Common Core State Standards. I would tell you that when the Common Core State Standards were developed, all of the groups that I indicated earlier who might have different opinion about what those standards should be were involved in their development. That included K-12 educators, college educators, business people, and parents in the development of those standards. And it was a fairly quick time frame process, but the input and feedback that went into the development of those standards was substantial, including many educators from the state of Oregon. In 2010, superintendents across the state began to encourage the State Board of Education to adopt the Common Core State Standards, something that really was unusual and fairly unprecedented, that the superintendents in the state would ask the State Board to adopt a new and higher set of state standards, and eventually the State Board did do just that. And then since 2010, since their adoption, we've been working on supporting educators as they work to align their instruction to helping students achieve that set of common standards. So a couple of things that we've tried that are part of the Common Core State Standards. One is just offering a really clear picture of what it is that we want students to know and be able to do, and to really narrow the number of standards that we have and have greater focus on fewer standards than such a broad scope of standards with that are very shallow. And that we wanted to raise the bar so that we ensured that all students graduated, as I said, that at college and career ready, what they need in order to be successful. And then within those fewer topics, that we ensure that there are lots of real life kinds of learning that go along with that, real life situations. So teachers have begun to think about that since 2010 and their adoption in varying degrees in districts across the state. So some districts set right to work on making sure that their teachers understood what these standards were and how to think about getting their students to achieve them. Some a little bit later to the party, but I would say that every district has focused on this quite significantly, at least over the past year, if not for the past 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. And that there is an opportunity with this common standard to work more collaboratively, and certainly to work more collaboratively not just with teachers in the state of Oregon, but across the nation. And that there are significant banks now of lesson plans, of interim and formative assessments that have been developed, because there is a commonality in 40-plus states on this set of standards that enriches the conversation about instruction. Students are asked to become better writers, more critical thinkers, and better problem solvers with this set of standards, and they are becoming just that. Within English language arts, there is still a focus on fiction, but there's also become a much keener focus on nonfiction and academic vocabulary through all kinds of content-rich nonfiction in grades K through 5, and that in grades 6 through 8, the effort to read and comprehend literary and informational texts, and then in grades 9 through 12, using arguments and valid reasoning from evidence. And the expectation really is that students are going to be able to look at and read from multiple texts on the same subject, and then form up their own writing and their own ideas from these multiple texts, and be able to create what I would call argumentation, so strong argument based on what it is that they've been able to read, and reference back to what they've read as proof of evidence, and to also have the critical thinking skills to accept or reject some of what it is that they've read. As we know, everything on the web is true, is not. And so they've got to be able to discern, right? And that's become a really important skill. So I thought it was really important for people to see this, grade 5 reading an informational text. And the reason that I wanted you to see this is Common Core State Standards in English Language Arts Literacy, and the number that corresponds with that is for fifth grade, and it says, integrate information from several texts on the same topic in order to write or speak about the subject knowledgeably. Just what I had previously described. And that is a standard that's written within the Common Core. It's a really nice standard. And it is something that we want students to know. Once in a while, I have somebody say to me, I don't like the Common Core, I'm opposed to it. And oftentimes, what I want to say to them back is, well, okay, can you tell me which standard it is precisely that you're opposed to? Here's a standard. Is this the standard that people are opposed to? Because it just is a collection of these, is what the Common Core is. And so if someone could point to me which standard it is that they have opposition to, we can take that standard to the state board and ask for them to modify it, and perhaps we could have it be different, and then their objection to the Common Core would dissipate. The same kind of thing in math. Here are K through 5. Some of the targets are to use and understand whole numbers, fractions, and decimals over the course of the grades. Middle school, prepare for geometry, algebra, probability, and statistics. And then application, again, at the high school level, so solving problems arising in everyday life and the like. Here is a grade 7 math standard. So solve a multi-step real-life mathematical problem posed with positive and negative rational numbers and in any form from whole numbers, fractions, or decimals. And so it would be solving that kind of a problem using those kinds of numbers. Support for implementation. So it really is unfair of us at any point in time to say to teachers, there's a new set of standards that we expect you to teach to, now go do it. It takes a great deal of work and training and support in order to be able to do that effectively. And in fact, I would argue that maybe the most important thing that we do of all, right? Because the kind of instruction that gets delivered is so indicative of the learning that's going to take place. And really strong instruction helps with learning, certainly. And so federally, we get Title IIA dollars, $42 million per biennia. And Title IIA dollars can only be used for staff development for educators. That's the only thing that they can be used for. So over the past 2.5 biennia, we can multiply this times 2.5, and we're going to be right in the neighborhood of $100 million that we've had available to us in the state just from federally, and these are dollars that we've always had, but that can be used toward that end. We also have been very fortunate that the legislature, through a strategic initiative out of the 2013 session, passed House Bill 3233, which had $11 million for educator effectiveness and implementation of the Common Core state standards. And we ramped up across the state a train-the-trainer model where we went out and we had over 1,100 educators three different times each of the last 2 years, so six different times overall, where we worked with leadership teams of teachers and administrators from districts on the delivery of the Common Core, with the intent that they would go back then and do that same kind of professional development with teachers in their home district. And we sent dollars through to the home district so that they had time to purchase teacher time to actually do that training so that we could scale that up across the state. And they were very successful training opportunities. So I do not have Christy Perry, the superintendent of Salem-Keizer, sitting next to me because she got called away on something, and it's really unfortunate. Last year, Christy and I had an opportunity to present on these following slides, and I sit here and do what I'm doing, and she was magical because she turned it right into... I had some kindergarten teachers who were very concerned about teaching the standards in the Common Core. We talked about it. I went in and observed their instruction. And what I found was that where this standard for elementary kindergarten writing standard use a combination of drawing, dictating, and writing to compose text in which they name what they're writing about and supply some information about the topic. And these are some of the examples from the day that she visited in the classroom of that kindergarten classroom that that students wrote, and just how impressive it was and how absolutely pleasantly pleased the kindergarten teachers were with the kind of product that their kindergarten students were able to create. So it isn't always that the spelling is perfect, right? But complete sentences in some cases and great drawings to explain so that any adult like me can actually read this and know that it says, I like the pumpkin patch at the maze, or I like my dogs and my cat. My cat, she's white and black, and my dogs are kind of yellowish grayish. Beautiful. And then we have this one with riding
and
my bike with my brother.
I like the picture of the cat that actually kind of looks like a dog. That's okay.
Okay. I like the riding my bike with my brother. And then lastly, for me, that's a little, hopefully just a little bit on the Common Core. Certainly, I'm happy to answer questions. But before I finish, I want to talk just a little bit about the assessment. So when you adopt a new set of standards, or whenever you say, here's what it is I want students to learn, then there ought to be some kind of an assessment that determines how well you're doing with students learning that set of standards. As an ex-math teacher, I usually tried to identify what is it I want students to learn in this set of lessons. And once I knew what it was I wanted them to learn, the second thing that I did was to develop an assessment. Because I needed to know if they learned it, and I needed to develop the assessment then, because I didn't want to alter the assessment after I had done my teaching. Because then I'm assessing on what it was that I taught, not what it is I wanted them to learn. So then I could develop the assessment, and then I would develop my lesson plans and my instruction. And then I would give the assessment and see how they did. Now, hopefully there was some interim assessment along the way, right, or some formative assessment along the way, so I knew and I could adjust my teaching as I went. But when I gave the assessment, it gave me some feedback about how I was doing. And it was an important component. And we have that, and then we also have that in this summative assessment that aligns to this new set of standards and is called the Common Core, or is called the Smarter Balanced Assessment. So I just want to talk for a second about this Smarter Balanced Assessment, because it's a harder assessment. And it's a harder assessment because the standards are a harder set of standards. They are set at truly college and career readiness. And in the state of Oregon, we previously have attempted to create standards and then match assessment to those standards to determine whether or not we're on the trajectory towards college and career readiness. And so what I'm about to show you is a set of slides that were created by a researcher at NWEA, Northwest Evaluation Association, a researcher named Nate Jensen, who's here today, just to back me up in case, you know, I would walk all over his slides. And this is a set of slides from 2010-2011, and this first one is on our proficiency rating, and it has to do with... I didn't know it was going to come in like this. And this has to do with reading. And you'll see here in grade 3 and grade 4, these are the New York standards. So basically what happened is Nate took the assessment that was being given in New York and compared it.
So that's, if I can ask clarifying questions, number of standards?
Thank you, Chair Doherty. No, this is a linking study that compares the MEETS standard on the New York assessment, mm-hmm, to a nationally normed reference, basically saying that on this particular assessment, that 77, if you pass the assessment, you would be basically in the 77th percentile, if you will, of other students across the nation who took the assessment through a linking study of multiple assessments between our assessment, New York's assessment, Kentucky's, Illinois's, and then ours. So that's the set of standards that existed in New York. Pretty high standard, in the 77th percentile to pass the standard. Here's what it looked like in Kentucky. So Kentucky had a much lower standard. And honestly, if I were in Kentucky and this was the standard that we set on the assessment for having met the benchmark, I would say that when students are achieving on the New York standard as compared to the Kentucky standard, the students in New York are performing at a much higher level.
Okay, Representative Frederick, if I could.
Yes,
I'm missing something here. Kentucky had a lower standard, or they scored lower?
Yes, Kentucky had a lower standard, and so the work that Nate did was about a linking mechanism to determine between the standard. So Kentucky had a lower standard as their standard for having met the benchmark.
So the Kentucky. Follow up there, if you don't mind. Kentucky expected less from their students than New York did. I'm trying to get an understanding of what you're talking about regarding the standard.
Yes.
Kentucky expected less from their students. They said, we don't expect you to be able to do your multiplication tables up to number 7. We want you to just do them up to number 5. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about in terms of a standard?
Chair Doherty, Representative Frederick, what I'm saying is that in Kentucky, you had to demonstrate a lower mastery of knowledge than you did in New York in order to meet the benchmark, in order to successfully have, if you will,
reach the meets standard. And I would say that a parent in Kentucky might say that their third grader is well on their way to be successful by having passed, met the standard in third grade, and be satisfied with where their student is on their trajectory to college and career readiness. And yet, a parent in New York could be more certain when their student passed that standard that their child was indeed on the trajectory to be college and career ready. But neither would necessarily know the difference because this linking study hadn't been done. So they wouldn't be able to actually do this comparison. They would just know that the state assessment was telling them that their child was on their way to be successful, on their way toward mastery. So if we move forward with that and I show Illinois and then Oregon. So the Oregon standard on the third grade assessment was the 14th percentile. This is 2010, 2011. These kids are in our school today. We told these third graders and their parents that they were on track. They met the benchmark in Oregon. And our benchmark was set at the 14th percentile.
Excuse me, Ms. Saxon, which is different than the proficiency expectations in New York.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this is because we've done a linking study to compare those assessments one to another and the standard that a student needed to achieve to demonstrate having met.
Mm-hmm.
This is really concerning.
Representative McLean.
Well, first of all, what you're showing is you're showing a study that looked at what are really a comparison of apple, oranges, and bananas. Because you're saying at the beginning is that the standard is different. The standard is different. And so I get that chart. I mean, I understand the chart. But again, in doing a correlation analysis, you have to look at the standards and first of all rate the standards to see why there were differences in standards to start with. So is that part of this particular study?
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean. Probably, I would need to have Nate come up and explain that. If we're going to get particularly technical,
the only reason I ask is when you look at results, when you look at data that has a different beginning spot. Well, then, if you want to be able to utilize that, we have to understand what the standards were, and we have to look at the standards first to see if there's some we agree with and some we don't. Maybe we like five of the ones from New York, and maybe there are four from New York. We just don't understand because it's a West Coast, East Coast thing. I don't know. Mm. But if we're going to look at these apples, bananas, and oranges, we've got to be able to do a rating in that integrated study that talks about the standards themselves.
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, the linking study that was done was to compare how the assessment was set up to determine whether or not a student was meeting similar benchmark standards.
Okay.
So the standards themselves might have been written mm-hmm. slightly differently within the states and probably mm-hmm. were written mm-hmm. differently, but it's the knowledge set that actually is being compared.
Well, and that's what I was asking about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if that's part of the study, then that's great.
I look to Nate just to see him nod his head as opposed to...
You have to come up and introduce, get yourself on the record, please. And then, Rob, you got about another 8 minutes.
Yep, introduce yourself and give your name for the record.
Hi there. My name is Nate Jensen. I'm a research scientist at NWEA. And so what we're doing here is we're linking the state tests that we see here, New York, Kentucky, Illinois, and Oregon, to our test. Our test is the common scale throughout this, and it's a nationally normed norm reference test. And so what this indicates is that in New York, in order to be considered proficient, you had to score at the 77th percentile on our scale. In other words, you had to score higher or greater than or equal to 77% of the population. By comparison, in Oregon, on our scale, the standard we set for proficiency was at the 14th percentile. So you only had to score greater than 14% of peers to be considered proficient mm-hmm. on the state test. So we're just finding the common point on our scale.
So the concern for me on there are several concerns for me on this. Obviously, we had a really low standard, and we basically told people your child passed this assessment and they're on their way. And yet when we compare us on a competitive nature, they were not. I mean, they were not competing with anyone else, and we told them that they were. And then further, if you look down to fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, you'll see that the standard gets higher for Oregon in each successive grade. So a student could meet in third grade, be satisfied with where they were, both teacher, parent, and child,
and then get to the fourth grade and still be at the 14th percentile and now not pass, or the fifth grade and not pass, because if they remain at the 14th percentile, they won't, because there we're at the 32nd percentile. And what we saw were fewer and fewer students meeting the benchmark all the time as they moved through the grades. And part of the problem was we didn't know why until people began to do things like these linking studies. Oregon has been at the forefront of assessment development, and we've done a really nice job of it for a long time. We have great companies like NWEA that help us develop that capacity here in the state. And the fact that we didn't do this well is part of why being part of a group that is doing this collectively is really important to me, because it gives us the kind of expertise and thinking that allows us to do that. And I'm not going to belabor the point. I think I've made it, but this is the same thing only in math. And the only thing I can say is that our standard was slightly higher in math, although seventh graders perhaps were meeting the standard at a slightly better mark. I would say that the Smarter Balanced Assessment, quite honestly, I think it's too long. If I was going to be critical of it, I have some criticism of it, just like anybody else might. It's a little bit too long of an assessment, but I can tell you that it's not a multiple choice assessment like our old one was. It is computer adaptive like our old one was, so it helps us know where students are who are on the extremes of the bell curve, if you will. And there is extended, there's a longer answer form, and then there's also work samples basically that are built into it. It's a more expensive assessment because it asks better questions, and if you are supporting your students to be successful on the Smarter Balanced Assessment, your instruction is way better than it would need to be to support students to be successful on the OAKS assessment. And so it's a better assessment. It aligns to our new Common Core college and career readiness standards. And with that, I will conclude. I'd be happy to answer other questions.
Okay, thanks. Any questions? Representative McLean.
I thought we were talking about standard core, but we're talking about smarter balance, so okay.
Well, actually, yeah, what,
but no, I just wanted to say, I wasn't going to take the time to do this, but since you brought it up, the situation is that, to your last statement, because I'm a teacher, just passed, okay, retired in June,
right.
And teachers do assessments every day, and as you described your math experience as a teacher, I couldn't agree with it more. That's exactly what you do. You want to make sure you first of all know what they should be taught, and then you want to make sure you know what you want to do for an instrument to be able to figure that out. And then you can have those interim assessments to make sure that you have some teaching tools to be able to get those kids there. So that was great. But when you're looking at something like a smart balance test, which you've indicated, you very purposefully ratchet it up, because you're trying to make sure that the kids at the third grade level start at a higher level of completion, that you have to have the time to do that. And so the situation, for example, with the Smart Balance test and having a moratorium on using those results this year is so that we have an opportunity to make sure that the rollout's there, and we also have an opportunity to make sure that the teachers have time to do the instruction to do that process that you just described. So there is a process to make those results, you know, happen. So and then the other thing is the difference between a summative test and an interim test. Because as you described again, you have to have that pre and you have to have that adjusted and that post experience to be able to do well on a summative test.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, Chair Doherty,
make sure we're
Representative
there.
McLean, you and I agree on everything that you just said.
Yeah.
And actually the 12-point, you know, kind of the white paper and the 12-point plan that OEIB and OEA and ODE came out with collaboratively is something that I agree with every single tenet within that, and it's something I'd love to see us move toward. There are three legs of an assessment stool: interim, formative, and summative. We have one really, really robust leg of that stool and two kind of weak ones.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see us balance that out, diminish the perceived import, the expense, and the time spent on the summative, and ratchet up the interim and formative with great staff development and great great assessment literacy instruction for teachers and educators across the state, so that we can do a better job of educating kids.
Okay, goals. We've got the same goals. Yes.
We do. We do, and that's great. And I think that there is a commonality of this really across educators in the state, and it gives us great opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions quickly?
Just one quick comment. It's more of a comment. I question whether the standards are better or just harder. I mean, there is a difference there. And I've seen, someone was talking about, I forgot who it was talking about having somebody jump a 5-foot versus a 7-foot thing. We would not ask a third grader to try to jump a 7-foot fence, even though you may think that because by doing that, if they did it, that would be quite a surprise. But it's not just making it harder, you want to make it better. And is there any evidence right now that regarding the claim that you're getting critical thinking and you're getting better writers as a result of both the Common Core or the testing for the Smarter Balanced? I really have some serious questions about whether that's actually producing what we want to see, because I have been talking about this and dealing with it for a long time, and watching SimCam issues come about. We had scope and sequence in. I go back to scope and sequence. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Yeah.
But we had those kinds of standards as well. So this is not a new issue. It's just for me. It's just as we look at this. I think it needs to be looked at in a context on whether we're actually getting something out of what we've been putting 30 years into.
Okay, so is that more comment?
That's more comments. Sorry, okay. Thank you.
Fine, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, Mr. Jackson, thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you much. How we're going to proceed on this, first of all, just for your information, there are about 30 pieces of submitted testimony on the OLIS system on 2835, so I wanted to bring that to people's attention. And we're going to start out with Representative Wilson and Representative Nierman, but we're going to be timing you two. We're not going to time, but we're going to keep testimony to about 3 minutes because we have to be out of here in an hour and 5 minutes. Okay? So thank you very much. And when we talk about, not you guys, but testimony, Richard will be keeping time, and you're going to be giving time signals. How are you going to be doing that, Richard?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we'll figure that out.
Okay, because we could either do that or we have this big, ugly machine like this, so, which is kind of scary, but we'll start with that. Okay, Representative Wilson.
Hi, Madam Chair. For the record, Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass. I want to thank you for agreeing to hear the bill, House Bill 2835. I know you didn't have to do it, and I appreciate the fact that you did. I'm not an educator in the traditional sense. I'm not even highly educated, as a lot of people have figured out by now. But yet, I want to speak from where I come from. I want to tell you about my interest in Common Core, and I want to be quick today because the real stars of the show here are the people who have driven many miles to get here today to testify. So if you'll allow me to speak my piece and depart quickly, I'd appreciate that. My interest in Common Core began to spring up when I announced my candidacy for office, and I immediately met a lot of new friends, some people that I had known for some time, who spoke to me about Common Core and what it was in the process of doing to their children. I think if you read the pieces of literature that we have received from many of our constituents that is available to all of us, you will be amazed at the graphic terms that many of these parents describe as to what is happening with their children. In the course of my investigation on this, yes, I did venture onto the internet and checked out YouTube and saw some mathematic problems being done, and it gave me a sinking feeling as I remembered a time in my own youth. It was my middle school years, about 1965 or 1966, when I was victimized by something called new math. I was a good student in math until that point in time, but after my adventure with new math, I lost my confidence in numbers, lost my confidence, which is something that we need to be careful for when we talk about our children and our students. I lost my confidence in math and for years wouldn't even come close to a checkbook anymore because of that, and I attribute that directly back to my experience with new math. And so what I saw exampled there and what I've heard exampled is much the same. I'm old enough now where I've seen many, many different federal programs come and go, including state programs, SIM and CAM, which is an embarrassment as we look back on that. No Child Left Behind, just another federal program that is failing. This is going to be the very same thing. It's going to be another program that is a massive experiment that costs a tremendous amount of money, that damages the confidence of a generation of school kids. As I say, I am not an educator. I run a small business. I inherited over a period of time a family business that is in operation for the last 58 years. The last 2 and 3 years have been the most successful years in our entire run of this family business. I look at everything through the lens of business. And if I happen to see in a ratings period, and my market is so small it's only rated once a year, but when my ratings come out and I see that my ratings are plunging, I realize I've got a problem. I've got difficulty. I've got rebellion in the ranks. When I see that people aren't listening to my radio station anymore, that's a sign of trouble, because that means before too long, people are not going to be advertising on my radio station any longer. And so when I have rebellion in my customer base, it is going to get my attention. And what I'm saying through this bill, we've got rebellion in our customer base. It's undeniable when you take a look at the portfolio of letters that we're getting from parents, we're getting from teachers, we're getting from grandparents. And speaking of grandparents, the other night I was taking two of my grandchildren across the Marion Street Bridge, and I asked the typical question, did you have fun in school today? No. What did you learn? Nothing. Come on.
No, they always say that.
I know you guys better than that. And so we began talking about what they learned in school, but really all I heard, and I got to tell you, I was absolutely stunned by this, all I heard was smarter balance testing. And I know we're not specifically talking about smarter balance, but we understand the relationship today between Common Core and smarter balance. And I was absolutely amazed that a 13-year-old girl and a 10-year-old guy were as literate in the nomenclature of testing as these kids were. I was stunned. They weren't telling me about the joy of learning, the fun of learning. They were talking to me about assessment tests. That was a new experience for me. I've been in the process of forming my opinion about Common Core and smarter balance testing for some time, but I was drawn, and several of you, in fact, Representative Frederick made sure that I knew about Dr. Zhao, who is testifying on the Senate side February 20 of this session. I would encourage everybody to go take a look at what that man had to say. And basically, he said, among other things, the testing culture is destroying creativity in our children. He is not alarmed in the slightest that we continue to have the situation of other nations' school kids looking better than ours at testing. In fact, he even pointed out in China, where of the millions of students who are graduating from higher ed in China every year, they've recently been told, as they are progressing up the ladder through their post-secondary education, hey, drop out. You guys drop out and go find a business, go develop a business, go do something entrepreneurial. And that is something that's been characteristic with our nation and our education system for years. We typically score lower than other nations, but yet this is the home of creativity. And what my fear is that what our children are being subjected to with Common Core education and the summative testing that they're going through is killing their creativity. And I am sorry for the teachers as well. What a life that must be when you have these young children who always have tremendous creativity in their kindergarten years, but studies show they begin to be sapped of their creativity the older that they get. And there's got to be a reason for that. And I say it must be terribly frustrating for a teacher in this process to see this kind of situation where you are trapped in a testing regimen, which is really always the subject of the day. You're trapped in a testing regimen that prohibits you from being as creative as you would love to be with children who have an unlimited ability to learn and to love to learn. And I think most of us sitting here today would say there's probably nothing more exciting than seeing the love of a child when it comes to learning, and also the enthusiasm of a teacher who is not encumbered with such things as Common Core and smarter balance testing. In summary, to me, this is just another federal experiment. And we have just done this over and over and over. I love local control. I love your local school boards being responsible for what is going on in education, because you can always get to them. You can always talk to them. What if these standards are wrong? And there's a very good chance that these standards are wrong. Can public education ever meet the needs of today's changing job force? Can we even be assured that we're asking an education system to prepare people for jobs that will actually exist by the time that they are ready to get those jobs? You know, I think in many ways we're calling on the K-12 education system to do something that it simply cannot do. And so I would just, like I say, I'm only a messenger here. I'm not an educator. I don't know how things work. The things that they're talking about, it's Greek to me. But you know, I've just been trained to smell when something's rotten in Denmark. And I think I'm smelling that now. So thank you very much for taking the time to listen to me today. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chair Daugherty, and members of the committee. And thank you again, Chair Daugherty, for hearing this bill, for giving us an opportunity to have this conversation. Like my colleague...
If you could make sure you identify yourself for the record.
I'm Representative Mike Nierman from House District 23. And like my colleague, Representative Wilson, I'm not really an educator. And I'm educated beyond my intelligence, some people would say. The presentation, part of the presentation that we just saw, said that that these standards were developed in consultation with teachers, with union leadership, and with policymakers. And I think today, hopefully, we get a chance to add a fourth group of that. We get to add parents. And so I'm excited to see what comes of that. This is an opportunity that we have to raise the bar on the conversation that we're having about education, to bring in ideas like freedom and the individual children and how they develop. And the question was put, which of the standards don't you like? And just tell me which standard you don't like. We can go fix that or whatever. And it may not be that any one standard is right or wrong or not quite right or anything like that. It might be the very existence of standards that's the problem. So maybe we need to think outside the box on this one. I know we have a lot of people that came from far away here, so I'll yield the balance of my time to them. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for these gentlemen? Seeing none. Thank you very much. Okay, well, I'm going to actually call the people first. I'm going to call you up in panels of three. And actually, Richard has the 30-second mark, and then we'll cut you off after 30 seconds. But we're going to have the people that came the furthest first. So Lisa Kroom, Suzanne Kennedy, and Sandra Abercrombie. Pardon? And then the three people on deck are, I'm just going in order of sign up, is Mark Callahan, Andrew Bench, and Kathleen Jeske. Okay, thank you. Make sure you all identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Hi, Chair Daugherty and committee members. Thank you for allowing this forum for us to be here, to be heard. My name is Lisa Kroom. I'm from Grants Pass, Oregon, and I'm a parent and a very involved volunteer in my community. And I first experienced the unpleasant frustration of the Common Core rollout the fall of 2013 when math was implemented. And my third grade son started bringing home the new standard worksheets, and it was very, very frustrating. I saw his extreme emotions of not feeling like he could get it, and I couldn't even explain it to him, the convoluted word problems and the issues. And after spending some time researching what that was and what the associated testing that was going along with Common Core, I realized that if I was going to do any favors to my son, I needed to get him out of Common Core teaching immediately. And within a month or two, that's what we did. We took him out, and he is doing fabulous. And his math performance is going so much better. He understands things better, and he doesn't feel like a stupid child. And that's what he was feeling when he was starting the first couple months of the Common Core implementation. I noticed that after spending dozens of hours researching the topic, how it came into our schools, who designed it, who is funding it and promoting it, and the lack of proof of research and merit, I was completely convinced we had made the right decision to get him out. And it made me sad, because after talking to the awesome teachers that my kids had, I saw what was happening. Their hands were tied, and I realized that they were getting gag ordered to follow the agenda and be in fidelity of what they were programmed to do. And they, it was hard to watch their sadness of what was happening to their heart to want to teach to the child and to the individual child. And I realized that it was like the reality of realizing, oh, you mean I've been lied to this whole time? And because what we were experiencing on the front lines is a huge disconnect from the rhetoric of all that I read about the standards. And, you know, any person would say, well, of course, I want them to be college and career ready. Of course, I want it to be rigorous and so forth. But I also, after talking with many people in my community, and going to a school board meeting, whom my husband was serving.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next.
My name is Suzanne Kennedy. I'm from Pendleton, Oregon. I'm a former middle school teacher and a current mother of three, so still teaching. And I also do some substitute teaching. We left our house at 7:30 this morning, and just to have the opportunity to speak in front of you today makes every minute and every mile and every are we there yet worth it. I'm speaking today, of course, in support of 2835, and I thank you for that opportunity to do so. I loved the picture of the pumpkin patch that the kindergartner drew, and it's a great segue for my first point, which is that my children were not allowed to go to the pumpkin patch this year as an annual class field trip because of Common Core. Because of Common Core and the assessments and the curriculum that it drives. And I know this is about Common Core, but we all know that they're married and they cannot be separated because one drives the other. So my kindergartner was incredibly disappointed that he could not go to the pumpkin patch because that's not part of the Common Core standards of reading and writing. So field trips are out in Pendleton for the most part. Hands-on experiences, science experiments are out. Social studies as an interactive lesson is out. If they get social studies or science, it is because they're reading nonfiction rather than fiction. In their classes, and it saddens me. As a public school teacher and a public school graduate, I am very much in favor of public education. I believe in it. I had this dream that one day all three kids would be in school full day, and I'd be able to go out to lunch with my friends, and that will not be happening because if Common Core remains, I will be homeschooling next year as well. You brought up the point that it's not research-based, and it's not, which is incredible to me as someone with a master's degree in education, that we would implement this across-the-board pedagogy change, this paradigm change, without any research. Specifically speaking to the math, we're asking small children whose brains, the abstract part of their brain, is not yet developed to tell us why things are the way they are. Now, I have an 8-year-old son, and I could all day long ask him why he hit his brother or why he drew on the wall. I'm not going to get an answer because it's not developed yet. It was there. Thank you for... thank you for your support of this bill, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak. If you have any questions, let me know.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman.
You, you can hold it out. Everybody, for people, you can have it like 12 inches from you. It's
12
very
inches.
Sensitive.
Okay, I'm a there mathematician. Sandy Abercrombie from Medford. I drove quite a way to get here today, but it's worth it. And thank you, Representative Wilson, for bringing this bill. BS in math from the University of Oregon in 74, and I completed math education master's work. And I want to tell you that my granddaughters have solved the Common Core dilemma. They moved to South Carolina. And I'm not happy about that. I used to live around the corner from them, taught them how to cook by having them bake half a cake. And just last January, I was out there and finally told my 11-year-old granddaughter that that's why I had her bake half a cake. She said, so that's why a half of a quarter is an eighth. Duh. Okay, so yesterday I had a conversation with my 15-year-old granddaughter about solving a system of linear equations by the... she was doing substitution, and there's linear combinations that I can have an actual conversation with her about algebra because she's free of the cloud that was hanging over them. I can see the difference just in a year being out there. They're in private school. Their family sacrifices, my daughter and son-in-law. And I do what I can. Three of their four brothers opted for a GED, and that's how they got through, you know. The creative and the smart ones will find a way through. I don't think we need to have the state telling the counties and the school boards how to do things, because my grandkids figured it out. They just get around it. Thank you for having us here.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, next we have Mark Callahan, Andrew Bench, and Kathleen Jeske. And then on deck, Kim Snyder, Ray Godfrey, and Steve Buckstein. Thank you very much for coming.
Who's first?
I see that a lot of people before me have made some of the points that I intended to make about the adoption of the standards and how they weren't democratic.
And make sure you identify yourself.
Oh, I'm
the
sorry.
Record.
I'm Kathleen Jeske, and I'm with Oregon Save Our Schools. I'm also a teacher. I've been teaching for 28 years, and I'm a parent and grandparent of Oregon students and former Oregon students. And I have two daughters and two grandsons, and I'm not going to talk about all the adoption. I'm going to talk about kids today. Because I've been teaching for 28 years, I've seen about 1,000 kids go through my classroom. And if I just had my daughters and my grandsons to go by, I would already know that every child is different, and they do not all reach the same benchmarks at the same time. And my concern with Common Core is that it's demanding even the youngest children to achieve a number of benchmarks at the same time. For example, all children reading by the end of kindergarten. All children are not developmentally ready to read by the end of kindergarten any more than all children are developmentally ready to crawl at 6 months or walk at 9 or 10 months. And there was truly not a single expert in early childhood or child development or a K-3 teacher that was part of the group that developed these standards. They were planned, as Dr. Saxton explained, from the top down, working backwards from college, and that is not how children develop and grow. They do not grow in a linear fashion in that way. I work in a dual language immersion school, and our goal at my school for all of our students, whether they come to school speaking only English or only Spanish, is that they leave bilingual and biliterate from our school. That's not a Common Core standard, although it does seem to be a skill that's valued in the workplace. And I'm just going to talk about some of the students that I have in my class this year and have had in the past. I teach sixth grade, so some of my students go through puberty during the year. Some still look like third graders by the end of the year. Some students are artistic and some are athletic. I have students whose parents did not go to school past the first and second grade, and I have students whose parents hold advanced graduate degrees. Some students are intellectually gifted and some are learning disabled, and I have a student this year who's been identified as both those things. Another student I have was born in Africa, and her parents served there with an international aid agency. They're bilingual and French and English. Another student's mother lives in Mexico, and he lives here with his 23-year-old cousin. He visits his mother every year and stays for about 3 or 4 months, and he's done this since second grade when his mother was deported. So he misses about a third of the school year each year. I have a student this year whose mother died right before Christmas because she had cancer. I have students have been removed from their home due to abuse and neglect, and these students are not going to all achieve the same standards at the same time. Last night during parent conferences, a former student who's 30 years old came by. He has a child at my school. When I knew him as a student, he wouldn't have met any standards unless there was a standard for getting in trouble. During his teen years, he was arrested for gang-related activity. He spent time in McLaren, and he got his girlfriend pregnant, and he was a mess. But today, he's married to that girlfriend. He is about to complete his master's degree, and he speaks 3 languages.
If you could summarize.
Yes. So, in summary, children are like flowers. They are not standardized. Some are roses, some are daisies. Some grow in fertilized gardens. Some grow in rocky soil. They are all beautiful, and you cannot force a flower to be opened with a hammer, and you cannot force students to develop more quickly by raising standards.
Thank you very much. Okay, next.
Yes, Chair Doherty, my name is Andrew Beach, not Bench, like the ocean beach. I might have scribbled it incorrectly. I'm a father of 3 daughters from Beaverton, and I was first learning about Common Core 2 years ago. When my daughter came home and was doing her homework, she was physically hitting herself in the head and crying uncontrollably. She could not figure out how to do the math, and neither could I. I couldn't help her. So for me, in the last week, I've done 2 things. One is I'm here today because this is so important. The second is I decided to run for school board in Beaverton. So I want you to know I'm not somebody that is politically minded normally. I would never be here and do this. But this is important. It's really important. And one of the things we have to realize as parents and as a community is who decides? Who decides the education of my children? And I say that's me. And so in terms of the Common Core and its genesis, we also need to realize who's been paying for it. And everybody knows who Bill Gates is and that he has a foundation. And to date, he has spent over $6 billion, that's with a B, on Common Core. And like, in fact, this Oregon Department of Education has accepted money, $1.9 million, from that same foundation. So it doesn't surprise me that we're, as Oregon Department of Education, for Common Core, because we're taking money for it. The other thing I would say is the people that developed Common Core were not educators. They were people from SAT, from the College Board. They were people from the ACT and from Achieve, Inc. These are all people that are profiting off of our children, and it's not right. And I would say to you, if you knew that they were profiting from this, why would you allow it to continue? It's just something that I think you should support 2835 as a father, as a community member, and as educators. It's just the right thing to do.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good afternoon, members of the House Committee on Education, Chair Doherty, I'm sorry for your last
name.
My name is Mark Callahan, and I'm a father of 2 daughters with me here today in the Salem-Keizer School District and a strong defender of the U.S. Constitution, which I also have here with me today. I'm here today to ask for this committee to support a yes vote on House Bill 2835, the bill giving school districts local control to determine if they want to implement the Common Core state standards. I have spoken on this topic against the implementation of Common Core in my local school district board level, but the most response I get is for the local school district board to roll their eyes at me and pass the buck back to the legislature to handle. I'm here today, this time, at this Capitol building against Common Core. Common Core is a top-down, cookie-cutter approach to education. It is against the tenets of local control. It was passed by several but not all states for a uniform education system across the U.S. In the past couple of years, Indiana, Oklahoma, and South Carolina have repealed Common Core in their states. Texas, Nebraska, and Alaska chose not to implement it at all. The goals of Common Core are eroding daily as more states and their residents and citizens are waking up to the true nature of the beast that is Common Core. I personally was threatened by a former school superintendent down in the Salem-Keizer School District for talking against Common Core. She called me up. She said that if I were to speak against Common Core again at a parents' meeting, I would be removed from the room. As more states repeal Common Core and legislation pending to do so, at least 15 states in the last count have the main... At least 15 states at last count, how can the main goal of implementing Common Core still be accomplished? The answer is simple. It cannot be accomplished. As I have met with my daughter's teachers at their school, the feedback I get is that they are having to comply with Common Core stresses them out by forcing them to teach to the test. There are teachers' unions across this great country of ours, and here in Oregon, that are coming out against continued Common Core implementation. I'm here today to challenge and encourage this committee to take a stand for local control of our education system here in Oregon by endorsing a yes vote on House Bill 2835 and signaling to the rest of the legislature that Common Core is not welcome here in Oregon. It is time to take back our freedom from the top-down big government programs like Common Core to ensure that our children have success in the future. I ask this as a father, a constituent, and a voter. Does not want my daughters dumbed down under a system of education tyranny that is Common Core. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, next we have Kim Snedet, Ray Godfrey, and Steve Buckstein. And on deck we have Terrence Taylor, Suzanne Kennedy, and Lisa, Terrence Taylor, Jack Giesa, and Lisa Maloney. Yeah, one. We're going to start. Flip a coin. pull the microphone just a little. Perfect.
Madam Doherty, Chairman Doherty, I've recently retired after 44 years of education in the state of Oregon.
And if you want to identify yourself for the record,
Kim
please.
I'm Kim Snyder. Okay. I'm a broken down, has been ex high school teacher and wrestling coach, starting at Woodburn. I am overwhelmed when I hear the testimony of those who have already testified. And I'd like to defer my time so that other people can have an opportunity to speak. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you. You're not so broken down. From a former broken down high school teacher, yes.
Well, Chairman Doherty, I'm Ray Godfrey, and I'm not an educator other than the fact that I'm a parent, and I consider that's the most important educator that is. And there's a higher standard than Common Core that's not being spoken of here, and I was kind of surprised that the educator didn't bring up the fact that the end result of education should be to develop citizens. And there's a higher standard, and it's engraved on the door of the U.S. Supreme Court, and it won't be spoken of here other than people like myself, but it's the Ten Commandments, and that's the basis of our law. It's the basis of our education, and to the degree the Common Core ignores all that, it's deficient, and it can't raise to the standard that we should have, and that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Buckstein?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Steve Buckstein. I'm senior policy analyst and founder of Cascade Policy Institute in Portland, policy wonk, I guess, for short. And I worry that mandating Common Core and smarter balance tests will turn out like the previous top-down reforms that Oregon has produced, not even talking about the federal reforms that have been discussed here. Briefly, as Representative Frederick mentioned, in 1991, the Educational Act for the 21st Century was passed overwhelmingly in this building with its now infamous SIM and CAM tests that some of you may remember. And the goal, what the legislature said the goal of that reform was in 1991, was, quote, to produce the best educated citizens in the nation by the year 2000. How'd that work out for us? Then in 1999, the quality education model promised and failed to get 90% of our kids to state standards. And now we see the state standards may not have been as high as we had hoped they would have been. I'm not sure. Well, actually, what they were then was SIM and CAM, which were never fully implemented. But that failed. So in 2011, assuming that the previous reforms were simply not comprehensive enough, apparently, Governor Kitzhaber proposed and the legislature enacted the Oregon Education Investment Board. Its goal, as you know, is to unify all education from pre-kindergarten through graduate school. That reform hasn't failed yet. As Representative Wilson pointed out, University of Oregon Professor Yang Zhao recently told the Senate Education Committee, it was actually February 10th, I believe, and in my written testimony on OLIS, there's a link to that testimony. It lasted about 51 minutes. But Professor Zhao basically told the committee, the Senate committee, that imposing any common educational requirements and standardized testing promotes conformity in our children. Instead, he suggested that we should help them foster their own creativity, diversity, and entrepreneurial inclinations. And he gave a personal story about this. He said that when he was a child in China, most jobs in his village revolved around agriculture. So the common core curriculum in his village in China was knowing how to ride a water buffalo. And he said that, he sort of laughed, he said, I wasn't very good at riding, driving, as he called it. I wasn't very good at driving a water buffalo, so I was encouraged to leave my village and come to Oregon. And he's now a professor at University of Oregon. When the Educational Act for the 21st Century passed in 1991, Cascade had a column published in the Wall Street Journal. There's a link again in my written testimony. Basically noting that well-meaning politicians had once again increased state control over education in order to mandate desirable results. And we warned that that revolutionary Oregon plan provided the nation with an important lesson in reform. And that lesson is how easy it is to fall into the bureaucratic trap of good intentions. That 1991 critique also applies to the current revolutionary reforms of Common Core and the Smarter Balance tests. But in reality, I don't think they're revolutionary at all. They simply show how easy it is to fall into that bureaucratic trap of good intentions. You want to do the right thing, but by forcing it on everybody else, you do the wrong thing. So please give school districts the opportunity to escape from that trap and pass support House Bill 2835. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we have Terrence Taylor, Jack Lisa, and Lisa Maloney. And on deck, Cheryl Morrison, Tim Cowan, and Joel Fisher. Thank you very much.
Since I got this in front of me, I'll go ahead and
you'll
speak.
Start.
My name's Terrence Taylor. I'm from Polk County. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to testify. I think it's overwhelming the number of people that are appearing, parents, educators, and people from all walks of life, to testify against Common Core and in support of this bill. I think it's an important thing that we look back at. The founding fathers knew that this was going to happen, which is why in the Constitution they specifically said education is a state responsibility, and it's not a responsibility that should ever be taken up by central government. And if we look at all of the government programs that have been launched, we can look at and say, well, how well have they done with the VET program? You know, well, that was a while ago. How about something more modern? How well have they done with Obamacare? You know, you can keep your doctor, you can lower your premiums. The government is not in a position to be able to put forth programs like this effectively, which is why they need to be taken care of within the community. I trust teachers to know how they can teach and specifically help the individual student. And I also recognize that when I went through school, that not all of us were college bound. We had FFA students, we had students that went into trade, and we had a very successful society. The idea that this one size fits all, and I'm going to make sure that you all turn it into this government associated robot, is absolutely ridiculous. If you look at the parents and the passion they have for their children, we need to focus on the ability to make sure that we as communities have the opportunity to walk to the school, change the curriculum, help the teachers move forward our education. We can't be asked to call up the government and put in a petition nationally to try to change something locally. I look at the four children that I raised and the education that they had versus my 12 grandchildren with the introduction of Common Core. I'm a fairly well-educated individual, and I spent most of my career as a professional project manager, and I know what happens in a project if you try to get something built by consensus of a huge group. You end up with something that doesn't work. You need to have accountability and responsibility at the lowest level. And in order to do that, we need to pass this bill and make sure that our teachers have that opportunity. Thank you so much for letting me speak.
Hi, my name is Lisa Maloney, and I am from Scappoose. I serve on my local school board. I'm a concerned parent. I have four kids. I don't know the people who have spoken here today, but I feel like I wish I knew them all very well because they share the same concern and compassion that I do about this bill, and I urge your support for it. I wish somebody else would have had 40 minutes to refute what Mr. Saxton, the information that he brought to you, because there's a lot that could be said there. We as school districts have had to accept this without question. That is, I believe, unconstitutional. I have seen, in my own observation, parents, school board members, attending Oregon School Board Association conferences since I've been a member, teachers, people don't know the full effects of the Common Core and the Smarter Balanced testing, but what I do see across the board is they know they don't like it, and they don't fully know it yet because we haven't ever seen it. We've been given something and told that it's college and career ready and tested and proven results, all these talking points, and there's no evidence for it. If this was a good program that we wanted and a way to educate our kids, where's the pilot program? It does not exist. It has not existed. And so we are subjected to taking on something that was never tried, it's never been proven, there's no proven results, and saying that this is the best we have and this is what we have to accept. And I reject that. And these parents and people here reject that. And we are asking you to please support this bill and give us the freedom in our school districts. And as a board member, I want the best for not only my kids, but the kids in my community and the district that I serve, so that we can have people who raise their kids and become great citizens, start businesses, and all those things. In fact, in the country of Singapore, which has the highest testing in their educational system, they have no entrepreneurship in that country. Not like America. America is different. America is great. And that is by freedom that we have as individuals and in our communities. And I ask you to please support this bill and continue to give us that freedom. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
My name is Jack Esp. I am a grandfather at this point. I have no children in school. I have grandchildren getting ready to go to school. I first studied Common Core about 4 years ago when I was running for State Representative District 58. And which I soundly lost. But I got into Common Core studying it, and in looking at it, it came to my mind the old saying, trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, where we're turning out a form of robot, thinking in the same pattern, looking down the same road, avoiding individuality and free thinking. It's a training in how to think. I can bring a personal story to this, which is pre-Common Core, but it was the same situation. I lived in California for a while, in Santa Maria. My daughter, one of the daughters, went to a public school down there, about 50-50 Hispanic American or Caucasian. She started the first grade there, and 6 months into her school year, she was considered a gifted child. She'd already accomplished Spanish, was moving up in math and stuff. The next year, I moved back to Oregon, to Klamath Falls. No programs. Here's what we have. Here's our cookie cutter. Fall in that. Well, she needs challenge. No, I'm sorry, we don't have anything that we can challenge her. It's what I've heard said here with Common Core. Everybody's brought to the same level. That isn't what makes our country what it is. When I went to school, long before most of you, there was school discipline, there were rules, there were truant officers, where students knew what the rules were, they had to follow the rule, they had to study. I was not an outstanding student. I went out of high school with a 2.35, I think, went into college, took me 5 years to get my BS, because I had never learned how to study in college, in high school, I mean. If we are going to get our children to be good in the future, I agree with the one point of common thinking that was presented today, but we need to teach the students how to study. I think that is one of the most important things that for advanced education there is. I'm here to ask you to, in the committee, vote in favor of this bill and send it to the House floor with a do pass recommendation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all very much. Okay, we have Cheryl Morrison, Tim Cowan, and Joel Fisher. Does Marty Hayden want to come up, since you'd be all by yourself? So if you want to come up with this panel, unless you want to be all by yourself.
Well, you know, I'm really not in the mood to be all alone today.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you.
Chair, committee members, my name is Tim Cowan. I'm going to make mine real quick. I'm a third-generation educator, and you know what my background is in banking. First of all, one of the things you have to look at, who decides what the goal is, who decides how it's accomplished, and who decides the responsibilities for accomplishing it. I had dinner with the president of Tokyo University, and at that time, Japan was recognized for their great education system. So I asked him, what are the differences? And he said, well, in Japan, K through 12, they teach their technical skills. In college, they teach socialization skills. In the United States, you teach socialization skills K through 12 and technical in college. I had to ask him which one was the best. He said, yours. Because by the time they get to college, it's very hard to teach them the socialization skills. Now, I wasn't a very good student. In fact, I didn't know how bad I was until I found my sophomore report card. I had a C, two D's, and an F. So I called up my dad and asked him, what kind of dad were you anyway? And he said, son, what's it pertaining to? And I told him, and I go, Dad, you were the principal of the high school. Now, I interviewed students down at Oregon State University, had a large pre-interview get-together, and they asked me, what do you do in your job? And I said, not what you think. You think I'm responsible for loans, personnel, operations. I'm not. I'm paid for what I don't do. If I have four things to do and I only have time for one, I have to know which three I don't do. I was on the Business Advisory Council at Oregon State University, and they asked me how much philosophy should be in their master's program. And I told them, why don't you just teach what doesn't change? And then the last thing, when I'd interviewed at Oregon State University, they asked me, what do you look for in an interview? I said, not what you think. You think I look at your grades, your professor evaluations, your work experience, and so on. I don't. What I look for is, we're going to spend 30 minutes together, and if I don't have fun, why would I want to spend the next 20 years not having fun? And if I have fun, then I'll go pull your file. I need someone who provides a competitive advantage. Period.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of Oregon Business Association. We're a statewide organization with over 250 members across Oregon. We spent the summer traveling around the state talking to many of these members, and they communicated to me that, you know, our students are simply not ready for a competitive, globally competitive workplace. I would take you back to the last slide that Rob was on, showing, you know, how we stacked up against other states like Kentucky, Indiana, and New York. And that having a set of national standards and expecting more of our students is not necessarily a bad thing. We believe that our students are smart and capable and can compete with states like New York. We think that our teachers are also smart and capable and can teach to a higher level. We are supportive of making sure that our teachers have the time and the preparation that they need to ensure that our students get there. And with that, we support the Common Core. Thank you for your time. And hopefully everybody here can give me like a 5-second head start out of the room.
We'll protect you, Joel. Thank you very much. This is a good crowd.
Yeah. My name is Cheryl Morrison. I am a mother to a kindergartner. I've also joined Oregon Citizens Lobby this legislative session, and I've been following this bill, and I definitely support it. I have some testimony that's been given at Salem-Keizer School District already, where it was pointed out the process by which they promulgated Common Core, implementing it, was fundamentally flawed and violated the nationally and internationally recognized process for setting academic standards. So it is in violation of, talking about since 1918, the American National Standards Institute, ANSI, has served as administrator and coordinator of the United States Standardization System. For almost 100 years, this institute has remained a private nonprofit organization supported by a diverse constituency of private and public sector organizations whose primary goal has been the enhancement of global competitiveness of U.S. business and the American quality of life by promoting and facilitating voluntary consensus standards and conformity assessment systems and promoting their integrity. ANSI's fundamental principles of standard setting include transparency, balance, consensus, and due process, or the right to appeal and revise by interested parties. You know, when I look at this, it's been said earlier, I mean, integrating parental involvement in curriculum, I think, is extremely important. I would be one of those. What else comes to mind? I also took testimony from an educator. She's in a smaller school district. I mean, she had 11 really good points, but, you know, one of the, I guess there's really two big ones that really stick in my craw. Sexualizing your children. I mean, I really hope that hasn't hit any part of Oregon yet. And I would be yanking my kid out quicker than, I mean, like last week. That is a huge, huge concern. He's 5 years old. Tracking the children, you know, data mining, getting their information and having that. I mean, a kid that screws up at 10 will follow them and allow them to haunt them the rest of their lives. No, I absolutely, please, please, I really, really support this bill because I will continue to go to the school board meetings and I will do what I can. Absolutely. I'm one of those parents that will be involved in curriculum. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Marty Hyen. I'm a parent and a Salem-Keizer School Board candidate. I would like the choice of Common Core being returned to the people in the local school board and parents. Implementation of Common Core was never brought before the people. Rather, it was just shoved down our throats. At a time when schools never seem to have enough money, why then change all the standards at considerable expense? Even if we're talking federal dollars, that's still our dollars that we're paying for. My son was never consistent. He's a 10th grader, by the way. He's never consistently been taught to spell correctly throughout his school time here in Salem-Keizer. Nor does he know cursive, so he can't read the Constitution for himself. And they never completed all of the multiplication tables. Yet, he's a tag student. So, you know, he should know that stuff. I don't believe any of this is part of the Common Core either. Perhaps the true problem is actually the short school year. And if we're gonna spend state and federal money towards for furthering education for our kids, maybe they need to be in school longer. I think we're one of the shortest number of days
the kids are in school in the country. I'm tired of my son being experimented on. He has been experimented on throughout his school career. They've tried different programs, and some were utter failures. And I don't want to have to move to South Carolina or wherever that lady said they didn't have Common Core anymore. I did well in college. I did calculus. I got A's and B's. Yet I could not even help my son with his math homework. There's something wrong. Math is math. You know, it just made no sense at all. So please return the future of our children back to the local level, the people that love and care about them, their parents, and the local school board. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, next we have Representative Frederick.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Well, I wrote some things down so that I can make sure that everyone here has a sense of what I'm talking about. You might be surprised to hear that I'm kind of torn about this bill. On the one hand, I have a number of objections to the Common Core state standards, as you all know. On the other hand, I'm not necessarily opposed to standards, as I hope you also know. Here's the thing. The question of standardization versus local control is an old one. The complaint that standards are in decline may be older. We know that Plato wrote about both his own complaints and quotes from Socrates about the younger generation of his time, with dire predictions for a future dependent on them. There are serious weaknesses in a system based entirely on local control. Well-informed decision makers should provide well-vetted guidance regarding what we expect as a state from our schools. I think we should be clear that religion ought not to be taught in science classes in public schools, for example. I think we should be clear that the schools are responsible for all students and that discrimination is out of line, whether it's through separate but inherently unequal programs or more subtle disparities. There are also serious weaknesses in a system that fully supplants local control with prescriptions for contents or methods. It's not nimble, and it throttles creativity and responsiveness that are essential parts of the educational process. It ignores an essential fact about knowledge and its acquisition. Human knowledge and experience is vast, and there are many paths to becoming a well-educated citizen. We will be stronger as a whole if many of those paths are taken. It is appropriate that we continually debate and adjust that mix. Where we go wrong is in letting that pendulum swing too far in one direction. We should also be clear that standards are nothing new. What is new is the national mandate, the rush to implementation, the objections from professionals and parents, and the questionable relationship to what is known about child development. Good managers and policymakers strive to locate responsibility, accountability, and authority in the same place. What I mean by that is that if your boss tells you to do your job a particular way and you follow those directions against your own better judgment and are then punished, held accountable when it doesn't work out, it's not a recipe for long-term success, not for you and not for the enterprise as a whole. During the past 25 years, we have shifted a lot of authority away from professionals in the field as well as away from locally elected boards. At the same time, we have called for increased accountability on their part, not ours. So I have to ask, if the Common Core experiment doesn't work out, if, as many parents and educators have warned, it kills motivation and impairs teaching and learning, who will be held accountable? Will it be just assumed that the teachers did it wrong and that the parents sabotaged their children's learning, that it simply cannot be the fault of the policy itself? There's a concept in education known as, perseveration. It is when you keep giving the wrong answer, keep repeating the same action in the face of evidence that it isn't working. If blaming teachers doesn't work, are we prepared to face that? Or will we just say that we didn't blame them enough yet and carry on? Finally, I have to say something about this. Poor children and children of color are often used as props, as embellishments to an argument for an agenda. We keep hearing that these standards are supposed to be good for poor children and children of color, but I just don't see how they address the challenges that these children and families face. If you look at the totality of the educational experiences the average child in poverty has available, then the totality of the educational experiences families of means make sure that are available to their kids, it becomes harder to blame disparities in achievement on some mythical lack of standards. We are told that poverty is not an excuse, okay? But poverty does explain a lot. Until we have the courage to face that, the rest of this is magical thinking. I guess this is sounding like I'm favorably disposed towards this bill, but in fact, I'm not sure. And frankly, I'm still listening. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, those are all the people that we have signed up, and we just have, we're at the end of our hour. But anyway, I thank you all very much for taking the time to come into Salem to give us your views. It's very important. It's called, that's what we call democracy. So with that, I close the Committee on House Education, and we'll see you all next week. Have a good weekend. Have a good weekend, education, and we'll see you all next week.